I think as time goes on, we will see changes for the best, and we are seeing some of them now. One of the things that will accelerate those changes, and again, why I think it's important and why I think we need to be enthusiastically engaged in making these things happen, is simply because of the people we love and care about. I have three daughters. I have a wife. I have three nieces. I have lots of women friends, and they have young ladies joining the workplace, their children are becoming young ladies, young adult women in the workplace. And I care deeply that they have a very positive, fair, respectful experience. As far as women rising because they're stunning, attractive, I think that beauty has something to do with that. I actually think, though, more important than beauty to some degree is a person's personality. And I think that's something that sometimes we're jealous. Lots of people are jealous of people that just seem so comfortable with others. No matter what group they're with, they seem to be people that other people want to be around. Sometimes it starts with a physical attraction. I think that can happen for men too, but more so with women. Sometimes other women are jealous of that. So are other men. I think it relates to, again, our emotions. I think whatever we have as strengths, whether it's our appearance, our physical appearance, our personalities, our knowledge, our technical knowledge, our analytic abilities, and our emotional intelligence, I think I want to use every strength I have, as I would expect everyone else listening would want to use every strength they have to succeed. My point is simply, don't hold other people back. Work to make everybody successful. That's what we're going for here. I think that's the idea. Thank you very much. We have a caller, I guess.
Yes, you do. Go right ahead.
Hello?
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 Yeah, I can hear you.
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, I can hear you.
Sometimes I have an emotional stress feeling. How do I end that?
I'm having a little hard time hearing you. Sometimes you have what?
Sometimes I have an emotional dead feeling, like a dormant feeling. How do I end that?
An emotional dead feeling?
Yes.
You're just not feeling anything.
Feeling dormant.
I'm sorry, it's really hard to hear you. I heard feeling dead. Is that like emotionally flat, not feeling something? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like feeling emotionally
empty.
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 Oh, okay. How do you deal with that? I guess one of the things you'd want to look at, and one of the ways to track that, is to understand that that's not a feeling you want. Obviously, that's why you're calling up and asking.
Yeah.
And so you want to be able to replace that with a feeling of fullness somehow.
Yes.
And the question for you is, when you are feeling empty, here's a strategy for you. One of the things that you can do is think about what's going on around you. What seems to be happening that causes that emptiness? And when you experience a number of times that empty feeling, and you've written down, because I think it's useful to keep a log, because sometimes you don't remember these things. You kind of write down what's going on in your life when this is happening. And when you do that, I think you at least from years ago from doing therapy, you begin to look for themes. Are there certain things that trigger that for you? And then you want to figure out how do you avoid those things. Or...
Well, I do a lot of walking, and I take my measure every day. And I pick up scrap iron for extra cash.
And are you saying that that's related to the empty feeling?
At times. Ah.
So, you take meds, so that complicates it a bit because there's some medication that's influencing how you feel, and I can't talk intelligently to that other than to say the things that I can work with you that I think can be helpful is, what do you think about when you're out walking? What can you be thinking about different than the things that you're currently experiencing that cause you to feel empty? And what I would do is after each walk, And after you've picked up whatever number of items of scrap and you've collected it and you've put it aside, sit down, think about the walk and think about how you felt during the walk and the things that you were thinking to yourself that caused you to feel empty. And what I would say to you, and this is where I think we have so much more control, this idea of take the control and take the wheel and control how you feel, is that you control your thoughts. I mean, as you're thinking certain things, you say, you know what, I'm starting to think about the same thing that causes me to feel empty. I don't want to go there. That's not the ride I want to take today. That's not the drive I want to be on. I want to go someplace else. And what you want to be able to do for yourself, and this is for everybody really, is what can you do instead? What can you do? What can you say to yourself? There's something called an emotional immune shower that you can pour over yourself. Let me do this with you. Can you think of a time in your life when life felt really good to you?
Yeah, when I had a gainful employment job.
All right. So it was when you were working, when you were doing something that was meaningful to you that did that. Okay. Can you remember some particular things about the workplace that were kind of fun to relive in your own mind?
Oh, yes, going to the stores, delivering the newspapers to the outlets, talking to the store owners and the store managers. A lot of times they would tell me get in contact with their paper distributor, and I'd say, okay, who is he? I'll talk to him for you to tell him to talk to you.
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually grew up with my dad. He was a truck driver, and he delivered the Boston Globe with trucks, and I used to go out and do a similar thing when I was a kid. And then I did it with him when I was a young adult, too. One of the things that I'd say to you isn't so much about that story, although I kind of enjoyed those times myself, so I can relate to you a bit. But what I would say is, as you're out walking, and as you're doing whatever it is you're doing on those walks, and you find yourself kind of going into a negative zone where you're feeling empty again,
yeah,
remind yourself of some of the more fun days you had out delivering newspapers and some of the characters that you talked to on a regular basis.
To kids' houses, to the paperboy and paper girl houses.
Okay.
To carry their kids, and I would deliver to the supermarkets and the corner grocery store, the corner convenience store, the corner deli, the corner pharmacy store, and a lot of stuff knew me by Les, by my name.
Well, you know what? I mean, what you're doing right now is what I'm encouraging you to do on your own.
Yeah.
Can you get, you know what I'm saying? Because don't you feel kind of good right now while you're talking about this stuff?
Oh, yeah.
That's my point. If you can just regenerate those images, just like you did with me, you don't need me to be asking you the question. Ask yourself the question, what about some of the things I used to do that I had a lot of fun with? And as you're out walking, remember those things. Keep those things uppermost in your mind as soon as you find yourself drifting off into emptiness.
Because I pick up beer cans, beer bottles, soda bottles, soda cans for the nickel, and I put that money aside for trips I take. And I'm not exactly thrilled about collecting Social Security disability, but it's the only thing I have going for me right now. I'm trying to get through mental health, a little part-time job, to make some extra PIN money, to make some bridge money. And I'm very happy when I'm doing something in the line of work, whether it's picking up cans and bottles or scrap metal or off the street. Someone told me I'm a green person. I'm picking up the refuge that people don't want.
Well, again, I heard you, and I think that it's something to do with your time. It's a way of collecting a few nickels and dimes here and there. It sounds like you're able to do a little bit of trip taking with it. And but what you asked me about was how do you get from feeling empty? And again, I'm going to have to close and go on. But
yes.
I want to remind you that you felt good telling me this story.
Yes.
And what I'd encourage you to do is make sure that you just remember those kind of memories while you're out walking. And I think you'll feel a lot better on those journeys as you experience them.
Well, this Monday I'm going to take a walk all the way up to the north end of town to see if one of the store managers are still there and say hi to him or her.
Great idea. All right.
We
got to go. Thanks a lot. Thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
Okay. The number here again is area code 203-336 9756. That's area code 203-336 9756.
All right, so we're back. And again, I thank the people who emailed and the person who just called. I want to talk about this idea of 100% responsibility and accountability. It's a very powerful concept. Let me just ask you something to consider. If I asked you or anybody, the average person, about a relationship and marriage, and I said, you know, there's a husband, there's a wife. What do you think the percentage of responsibility for making that relationship work is? I mean, is it some split 50-50? Is the husband more responsible or the wife more responsible somehow? What do you think most people would say?
Would you like to speak with them?
Well, I'm going to ask you to... I would think that most people are going to tell me something along the lines of 50-50. When I've asked a question with a group of people I'm speaking to in a keynote or in some kind of presentation, people will tell me, well, actually, the truth is it's about 80-20. The men don't do very much. It's more about the women making it work, if it's going to work at all. And then I've had a few men say, you know what, it's actually 60-40 on my end. I think I'm doing a lot more than what my wife is.
Excuse me, Chuck, we have Sandra on the phone. She'd like to talk to you real quick.
Sure.
Sandra, go right ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Sandra.
Yes. Hi, how are you?
Fine. How are you, Sandra?
Well, I could be doing better.
Okay.
I'm calling in because I have an issue going on in my life. I'm involved with a polygamist, and I'm not sure if this is a relationship I would like to continue in. He has a wife.
Right.
Married through his tradition, not legally here in America. And I'm considered the co-wife, but he spends more time with her. And I feel like I'm just neglected or, you know, he's not spending enough time with me. So I have problems with that.
Well, you know, there are a couple of ways of looking at this. One is... the fact that he's a polygamist and it's, you know, a multiple relationship of some kind, whether we called it polygamy or not, there are people with relationships with more than one other person. And the question in any relationship has to be, are you getting what you need? Are you giving what you should? And the question for you sounds like you're not getting what you need out of the relationship.
Right.
And one of the things that I would ask you about first are... you thinking that it's possible to get what you need out of this relationship? It sounds like if he's paid a little more attention to you, that you would be fine with that, or maybe a lot more. I don't know how much. But if he was able to somehow shift the amount of time that he was with you, that you'd be fine with this relationship. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. If he only spent just, you know, quality time with me or called me more often, I would be happy with it. It doesn't take very much to satisfy me. Just if I heard from him more often, and if he spent, you know, an hour with me, 2 hours with me, you know, a few times a week, I'll be satisfied with that. I'm not asking for very much.
Okay, so now in polygamy, I typically think of people living all together. It sounds like that's not the case here.
No, it's not.
Okay, so, you know, there... It's a bit strange then to, because if you're, it's kind of like you're a third person in a relationship. The main relationship is with the first wife, and he sees you occasionally when he feels like it. Does that sound right?
Yeah, yeah. He wants me to meet his wife, and I'm not ready for that. Only because the culture is different, and... I don't know what to expect in that situation.
Does the wife know about you?
Well, she has seen my pictures, but I don't think he has officially came out and told her that, you know, that we have a relationship.
Well, you know, let me say what's probably the important to say. One is, you know, if you know, one of the questions I would ask myself if I was you is, why do I want this relationship? Why I want a real? I mean, more traditionally, why wouldn't I want one man and me to be together if I was you? I mean, I would want to know that first.
Well, I'm lonely.
Okay. So, and this is what works for you right now.
Yeah, it's working for me right now. When I met him, he told me that he believes in polygamy. And, you know, I asked him, I said, well, are you married? And he didn't say yes or no. And I found out about this woman through his website.
Ah, okay. Well, here's what I would say, because I think, you know, it's fairly complex. There's a couple things. I don't think you have to fill your life this way if it's just about dealing with loneliness. There are other ways to deal with loneliness. I was talking about this on my show last time, and I suggested, you know, if you don't want to be lonely, join a charitable group where you are indispensable in giving aid to others who desperately need your help.
Well, and, that's what he has. He has a nonprofit.
Yeah, but he's not the one that we should be talking about, because you've got problems with this fellow. I mean, it doesn't sound all that honest. If it was a legitimate relationship, three people all knew about it, that's different.
Right.
But I don't hear that here.
Okay.
The fact that he wants you to meet with his wife, if you really think it's possible that this is a legitimate person and it is at all possible that he really wants it all to work, then you might consider making that move to meet with her. But honestly, just listening to you and the way this all evolved, I think you're probably best off saying to yourself, I don't need to be in this relationship. I want to feel belong. I want to feel caring and I want to belong to somebody else. And I want to have a relationship with somebody that's real, that's truthful, that's sincere. This isn't it.
Right.
And so there's real pressure here because you are feeling lonely. And I would say to find another group. You know, it's hard to just remove yourself totally if you're feeling this way.
Right.
But I would find another group and then gradually remove yourself. I mean, if it was me, I'd run as fast as I could to this other group. just something else, you know. Because this doesn't sound all that healthy to me. But
No, it's not. It's not. And I've tried several times to remove myself. I did. When she came, I'm calling from Connecticut.
Okay.
When she came to Connecticut, I ended the relationship for a couple of months, and then I found myself calling him back.
Right, because let me suggest that you did that because you didn't find another way to fill that need.
Yeah.
That's the key. You've got to find something else to replace it. So, I mean, I'm going to talk about this in a minute anyway, but the idea of being accountable is like saying to yourself, why am I letting him make me feel this way? Why am I giving him that power? Why is the idea of take the wheel and control how you feel is you get in your car in your mind and you drive to another place and you go there and you stay there. You don't go back to this place.
Yeah. But it's so hard.
It is hard, but nobody.
It's very hard.
But you know what?
Especially knowing that he's so close by.
Yeah, but let me tell you the best part of this. You are in control of this. Nobody else is. If you don't choose to do this, this is about you not choosing to do it.
Yeah.
You don't have to do this. You are in control. You can take that wheel and go some other place. You've already done it. You just didn't stay with it.
Yeah.
But the reason you didn't stay with it is you didn't find something to plug into. You need to find something to plug into that fills you up, that says it is such a great place. And it may not be sexual and it may not be romantic, but it's a place where you're needed, where you belong, where you're making a difference. And I think that counts for everything.
Okay.
That help?
I think so.
I hope so.
Thank you for the encouragement.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Bye bye.
So we were talking about. I just got an email about Big Love. Okay. Well, let's see what that is.
I watched that. It's real intense. It's about polygamy.
Yeah, right. I don't think that's where she needs to go. I think she needs to go as far away as she can from it. All right. So this idea of being accountable. Again, as I was talking to you about this relationship issue, who has the most responsibility? Does my wife? Do we share it? Is it 50-50? One of the fascinating things about this is based on a story I'm going to tell you. And the story goes like this. By the way, I want to tell you up front, this is not a true story, but it's based on a lot of truths and a lot of similar kinds of things that have happened. This woman in her home has raised her children, and she basically has a lovely home that she shares with her husband, who isn't home yet. She gets a phone call, and it's a phone call from a neighbor, and the neighbor says, "Can you watch my toddler?" I'm really sorry, but something's come up, and I don't have a babysitter or a time to get one, and I'm really concerned that I don't have a place for Johnny, and Johnny's three, and I've got to go, and I've got to meet my husband. His car broke down. Can you please help me out? I might be a few hours. I don't know how long. Can you help me out? And she, without thinking, she just says, oh, of course I'll help you out. And so she takes Johnny in, and Johnny comes over the house, and she's with Johnny, and she realizes all of a sudden that she is going out. She has a meeting tonight. She has a book club. She's been very excited. She had recommended the book. She was going out that night to her book club meeting. She couldn't really not go because it was the book that she had recommended. And she realized, oh, my God, I got to go out to this book club meeting. And, well, I'll ask my husband, you know, if he can watch Johnny, because I don't know how long it's really going to be. So her husband walks in the door. And he's walking in the door, and he's got like two briefcases full of stuff. He's got a whole bunch of work to do that night. And he walks in, and he says, hi, honey, and they kiss. And he says, oh, why is Johnny over the house? And she says, well, you know, May had a problem. She had a run out, and she asked if could I take care of Johnny. And he said, that's nice of you to offer. I'm glad you did. She said, yeah, but I forgot. I have to go out tonight. Can you watch him? He said, oh my God, I can't watch him tonight. I've got a ton of work to do. You can look what I'm bringing home here. She said, oh, please, you know, if I can't, what am I going to do? I've got to go to the book. He says, oh God, okay, leave him. I guess I'll watch him. So the wife leaves shortly thereafter. The husband's home, and he's watching Johnny. He's sitting in the kitchen doing a bunch of work, and then he realizes that, you know, there's something he wanted to see on TV. It was an important show that he wanted to watch, and it was a CNBC special on something about the business that he's in that he wanted to see what they said, because he knew everybody at the office would be talking about it the next day. So he moved into the other room. He brought Johnny in with him. And he's watching the TV, and he's doing his work, and Johnny's kind of mulling around on the floor where he is. And then he really gets into this show because they're talking about things that relate directly to what he does. Now, this is going on for a period of time, and he's really kind of watching, and he's intrigued. And then all of a sudden, he gets this deep, ugly feeling in the pit of his stomach, and he realizes that he hasn't heard anything from Johnny in the last, I don't know, he looks at his watch, maybe 10 minutes. So he gets up really quickly, and he goes in the kitchen, and he opens the door of the kitchen, or walks in the kitchen, and there's Johnny on the floor having opened up a cabinet and poured some liquid detergent. Drunk some liquid detergent that was, nothing was baby proof, nothing was toddler proof. It was all, you know, all the kids were gone. They didn't need to do that, and none of this was supposed to happen. So he sees Johnny on the floor, and his eyes are kind of glazed over, and he doesn't look right, and he's not talking. He's just lying there. And he calls 911, and 911 comes, and they take the baby, you know, the toddler, out, and they said, it looks like he's going to be okay, sir, but we're not sure. Are you the father or the grandfather? He said, no, it's my neighbor's child. He said, well, please call them right away and let them know. And anyway, the wife comes home, and the wife and the husband go at each other. Right? What happens? It was your fault. The husband says, it was your fault. I never promised. You promised, and then you left him with me. I told you I had all this work to do. She said, I wouldn't have left if I thought you weren't going to watch him. How could you let this happen? And how could you? Oh, my God, what are we going to do? And all of a sudden, it's blaming and justifying back and forth, back and forth. Now, whose responsibility was it? What happened to Johnny? Whose responsibility was it? What would you say if you were here with me now? Would you say it was the husband's responsibility or the wife's? Who's 50%? Well, what if they both took a more enlightened view and they said, you know what, we both have 100% responsibility. Well, then the husband could say, well, you know, dear, it was your 100% that got screwed up. You should have never said yes if you couldn't do it. Why leave him with me? And she looks at him and she says, you know what? It was your 100% that did it. Because you said you'd take care of him. I never would have left if you didn't say that. And meanwhile, you got a poisoned child. Here's what I want to say. What I want to talk about that's really important is this idea of taking 100% responsibility for something and not considering that anybody else has anything to do to make things right. I take 100% and expect 0 from everybody else. If I take 99 and I give you 1 and something screws up, I'm going to blame your 1%. If I take 100 and I give you 0 and something screws up, I can only look in the mirror to see what happened. Here's what I want to tell you about. There was a time when this came big time into my life, and I want to talk a little bit about that. I want to talk about it in a way that teaches you how this really works. But I want to do that in a way that we do some of this next time, because I want to have something for you to come back for. So anyway, what I'd like to do now is just tell you a little bit of a story, kind of lead into where we're going next time, and then we're going to close here for the day. Thanks so much for listening. What I want to do is just tell you this part. So one day I come back to my own home. And in coming back to my own home from being at work, things had happened. I had three children by now, and I was, you know, feeling really neat about the experience of work. You know, every once in a while you start getting promoted and things are happening and you're moving up this ladder. And I got caught up in me. I always had this image of myself as a great dad and as a great father. And I walked in the door and I was doing some great work in the office. I was actually teaching when I was just told you about this idea of 100% responsibility and how important it is to be accountable. Anyway, sometimes these things are just theories. And then all of a sudden they hit you in the head about how powerful they are and how important. I walked in the house and I went to say hello to my wife. And I went to kiss my daughter because it was kind of late at night and she was going to bed and it was my youngest daughter. And I went to kiss her and she wouldn't kiss me. I mean, she really wouldn't kiss me. It wasn't like she was like busy with something. She just wouldn't kiss me. And it was like I was a stranger or something. And it was like very upsetting, right? Because I'm her dad and you should want to kiss your dad, shouldn't you? And so I'm struggling with what's this about? And so at that point, I hadn't learned about emotional intelligence. And I said, must be my wife's fault. Must be my wife's fault, because why would my daughter not kiss me? My wife must be turning her against me. And I thought all these horrible thoughts. And then I realized, what? I just got finished teaching this concept of 100% responsibility. How could it be my wife's fault? And I started to go through in my head. I said, you know what? I have two other daughters. My first daughter, when she was born, I spent all this time sitting with her, reading with her. It was so exciting to have my first child. I spent so much time with her. And then when my second daughter came along, I tried to be really good as well, but I had to divide the time now because now I had two of them. And I was becoming a little bit more important at work, and I was busier at work. And I had spent time with them, but not quite as much with the second as I had with the first, and I was, you know, not able to spend as much time with the first anymore either. But, you know, as they were getting older, they were getting kind of more interesting to me. I wasn't so interested in them as babies, but now they're actually little girls, and they were becoming athletic and interested in sports, and all of a sudden I had a way of connecting with my daughters, and I was coaching the two of them. And I thought to myself, with my third daughter, that she should know what a good dad I am by watching me with the other two.
Chuck, why don't you hold on to that? And I hate to cut you in the middle of that, but why don't we take care of this first? We'll be back at 6. Don't you dare go away. The number here is 203-336-9756. It's Speak with Chuck.
Hi, my name's Chuck. I invite you to join me for the Emotion Roadmap every fourth Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m., a show where you will learn to take the wheel and control how you feel. So I was talking to you about the situation with my daughter, and it occurred to me that I was responsible. I hadn't really been such a good dad, and boy, did that upset me. So if you remember the concept of my emotion roadmap and take the wheel and control how you feel, and you add to that this idea of being 100% responsible, this wasn't about my wife. It wasn't about my daughter. It was about me not being the dad that I had always said I was going to be. And so how did I turn that around? Well, first of all, I thought about, you know, well, how am I feeling? Well, I'm pretty upset. How's my daughter feeling? She seems estranged from me. She seems distant from me. How do I want to feel? I want to feel loving, cared about, part of her life. I want to feel loved by me. I want her to feel accepting of me. I want her to feel like I'm a great dad. And next time when we get back together again, I'll tell you how I turned all that around. And I want to talk to you right now, though, just to remind you about what we talked about today on this show was this idea of an emotion roadmap. However you're feeling when something isn't right, ask yourself, What am I feeling? What would be ideal for me to feel? How do I get from what I am feeling to what's ideal? And what am I willing and able to do about it? That's the concept we're going for. Now, we talked about the loss of a job, how a person transformed themselves from a poor, awful experience of losing a job to being so much better going forward in another position and another place. And we talked about the idea of being creating a civil culture, a civil and respectful workplace where everyone can rise based on who they are and what they bring, not what they look like or their gender, their religion, and so forth. But what I want to close with, because the memory of this woman was so important to me, I want to remind you about the elegant lady that passed away, my mother-in-law, Helen Brand Greif, and I want to close with the song that we opened with, Like a Rock. Next time, March 27th, ask your friends to join you in listening. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Stood there boldly, sweating in the sun. Felt like a million, felt like number one. The height of summer, I'd never felt that strong. Like a rock,